got them both going.
Yeah.
I can see the red light on the one. I think you're, yeah, you're in business.
Yeah. Okay, today is January 26, 1994, and we're driving towards Hardin, myself, and the store, Connor, and,
who are you?
And I'm Grand Bulltail. We had been talking before, and, I'm worried about the things that you write about Crow people and our past history. People who come and do research, or Crow people who write about the Crows, our culture and our tradition and our history, they only write about the Klan system, the political system, and our treaty with the United States government, and they don't do anything about everyday life, what the people did every day. And sometimes it's more dramatic and it's more interesting than what people usually write about. And the Klan system has been written to death, and I'm getting tired of picking up articles and magazines and reading about the Klan system of the Crow tribe. So I thought it would be interesting to talk about the role of the women in before the reservation time. What the women did and what their duties were, and how they were trained, and just what they did in everyday life. And I want to talk about certain women. I want to talk especially about a woman, an old lady called. Her name was Old Woman, and she was an adventurous woman, and she had done a lot, quite a lot in her time. And I've already talked about my grandfather, Kamsa Brett's mother. She was also an adventurous woman, and she did more in her lifetime than other people in her era. Today I want to talk about what we call medicine bundles, or in Crow, Machbe. It's misinterpreted, and they talk about it today, but I don't think they quite understand it in the context that it was used or understood before the reservation time. And I'm worried about it, because a lot more and more people are trying to get involved in a religion, in the Crow religion before the reservation time and before Christianity. They're getting Christianity and our religion mixed up, and I think it should be told in the context that it was used and how it was viewed by the old people before the reservation time. Not too many people knew the old people, the old people who used this, this medicine bundle or the machbe. And my dad, in conversation with Pliniku, had said that he himself was not as great as Machbe, as his father and his grandfather before him. He said they really had the power. He said, I have the power, but not as great to as a degree as those two. So I think it became less and less as Christianity invaded the lives of the Crow people. It became less and less, and Christianity, as it progressed among our people, it was less used, less and less, especially in the early 1900s up until 1940. Then during the Second World War, for some reason, maybe because the people were, most of the young men were going off to war, this medicine bundle or the machbe is used more and more. We've become involved in it more and more, and more people wanna get involved in it, but they don't understand it. I don't think they understand it in the way that it was used, in the way the old people looked at it. And I think the correct term for it is transcendentalism, because you transcend from a normal person to a level above what normal people can do when you use this, the machbe or the medicine bundle. And people who are called machbe or use the medicine bundle become a part of this. They are absorbed in this power from plants, rocks, celestial bodies, the moon and the stars, and animals. But not everything in the universe has this power. Just certain things, certain individual things in nature have this power, but nobody knows where it could be. From what I understood, when the Supreme Being went around and created things, as he went and created things, he left his power, a lot of his power, in certain places. And this power stays there as long as man does not violate it, does not transgress on it, does not walk on it. It stays there, but as soon as man violates this certain place, this kind of a window from nature to the supernatural, it diminishes. It quickly evaporates. So the Crow people, having understood this, they perform ceremonies. They carry a pipe, and it sort of neutralizes the what man does, how man diminishes this power. It neutralizes it so that it stays there and people can use it. But if you don't understand how to do this and do not understand this certain power, then this power can go out of control, and that's what I'm worried about. As people use it and do not realize what they are doing, it can go out of control and cause problems for themselves and other people. So that's how we get it. It's we derive certain powers that was left there by the Supreme Being, and then we transcend them to a level above what ordinary people can do. And this is what the machbe or the religious viewpoint before the reservation times, like in Plenicu's time and before him. But he said, as more and more people came into into where the Crow territory is, where the people were, as more and more people come in, this power has diminished, has diminished all the time. But there are still places that retain this pristine nature, that when the Supreme walked the earth or had looked at it and decided to create it, the power, some of it is still there. But I don't know to the extent. But anyway, that's the viewpoint that I understand, that the old Crow people, that was their religious viewpoint. And some people think that there were some people that were kind of teachers who went around and taught the Crow people these things, but it was not taught that way. People needed this thing. It was an important in the old days to have this power. So everybody wanted it, and they understood it, that it was there. So as people went out to try to get this power, they understood it from their own experience. And they did not talk about it in public, but when people went to them and asked about it, they would tell them to the people that wanted to know. So that's how it was passed on. There were no teachers. So people think that there was somebody, kind of a shaman or a medicine man that everybody went to, like the Hindus. They have these people that people go to ask about religious things, but it was not like that. There were some people that understood it, but they were they guarded this secret. They did not everybody to know about it, only to certain people. And this another thing about this power is that just because somebody goes and fasts and goes on a vision quest, they immediately get this power. But it's not that way. This power does not go to everybody. Even in the old days, when people went on vision quests, sometimes they would not obtain this power. For instance, there was one example where they said a man named the one who obtained the bay horse, that was his name, fasted on an island on a lake, and after 2 days a voice came and said, "Go home, the powers that are in this area do not like you." They told him that. So not everybody could, not everybody was, I don't know how to say it, but could obtain this power. So that's one thing that people must understand. And there are only certain people that could retain this power. Sometimes it came to some people by accident. For instance, there was a man named Raven Face, and I can't remember what his name was before they called him Raven Face. But Raven Face came from an influential and wealthy family. So when as a little boy, he was overprotected. His parents would not let him participate with the other boys or play with them, and he was always with older members of his family. And he had always well dressed and had the best of everything. He had nice horses, but could not run and play with the other boys. And finally Raven Face got used to this way of life. He became a loner. He would sit by himself while other people went and did their things, and people got used to him too, also being off by himself all the time. And finally when he reached the age when most young men went off to war, he did not go to war, and he would stay at home. And he had no medicine bundles or had this power, and he had no need of it because he didn't do anything. And he had everything that he needed in life. It was given to him by his parents. And then one day, people were having, some young men were having horse races. They were having horse races near where the people were camped at that time. And all the young men went out and they let their racehorses with them, and one by one they would race each other, and Raven Face, as usual, rode up and had all his fine things, and had a nice horse, but would not race him. And he rode off a little distance from everybody else and sat off on a prairie by himself. And it was a nice day to start with, and as the day progressed, a small cloud came up like it would in the springtime. A small cloud came up it started raining, and then there was a violent wind that came up. And as the wind came, most of the people went back to the camp or tried to find shelter, but Raven Face stayed where he was. And after the cloud passed, he saw a jackrabbit running towards him. It was running as fast as he could and ran towards him, and Raven Face tried to scare the rabbit away from him, but he ran straight towards him and ran under his pack saddle, saddle pad. He was sitting on his saddle pad, and the rabbit ran under the saddle pad, and Raven Face tried to scare the rabbit away, but the rabbit would not move. It stayed under there, and as he was trying to scare the rabbit away, he noticed that a hawk was circling above him, and he knew that there was something strange about this incident. And as he was trying to scare the rabbit away, the jackrabbit started talking to Raven Face. He said, "Protect me from that hawk up there, my elder brother. If you protect me, I will give you my powers," he said. "I will make you a war party leader, and then you may go out, and you will be successful against your enemies, and you will bring back many horses, and you will count many coup, and you will be a great man." And he showed him what he could do. He showed him a vision, what Raven Face could be if he protected him from the hawk. But then there was thunder and lightning, and then the hawk spoke to him. He flew close to him, and he spoke to him. He said, "Give me the rabbit. I will make you more powerful than what the rabbit promised." And then he showed him a vision. And out of the cloud, a young man came riding up on a bay horse, and it was marked in certain ways with lightning marks on the chest and on the face. And a young man carried a certain shield and also had a certain headdress. And the young man was painted in a certain way. And then he pointed to the east, and there were enemy. The Sioux were there, and the young man rode among them, but was not killed, although they were shooting rifles and bullets and arrows at him. He was not killed, and he came back and he said, "Nobody can kill you." And he said, "You will live to an old age." And he said, "You will be more successful in battle than what the jackrabbit had promised." He said, you will count many coups. He said, "If you give me the jackrabbit, I will give you this." But Raven Face would not give up the jackrabbit. And he was undecided what to do. He did not want the jackrabbit to die, but then he also wanted to please the hawk. He didn't know what to do. And he finally said, "Both of you go your own way. I'd have no wish for these powers." And then that's when both of them told him that they wanted to see how greedy he was. And he said, "You're not greedy, you know, you own all these powers already. We give them to you." And that's how Raven Face got this power and became to be a famous chief. So sometimes it happens by accident, and the power comes to the person, not the person going to the power, going on a vision quest and automatically being a medicine man or a machbeh. This does not happen. And another time, another example that I was told when I was asking about these things was about 1872 or 1873. Although some crows were still wandering about leading a nomadic life all over the Yellowstone Valley and the Missouri River and towards the Platte River, there were some people, some Crows who were already settled and lived on ranches and raised horses and cattle. And some were living near Sheridan, Wyoming, on Goose Creek and some on Bighorn River, because there were soldiers that were there in that area. So the people lived there and sold horses and whatever, traded with the soldiers and the wagon trains. So there were some Crows that were living near Livingston at that time. And one of them was a man called Blackbird, simply Blackbird, not Blackbird on the ground or High Blackbird, who are famous people. His name was simply Blackbird. And Blackbird had an uncle that was living near Sheridan, Wyoming. And one spring day, he decided to visit his uncle. And he was riding along the trail on the Yellowstone River. And near, I don't know if it's east or west of Big Timber, but near there is a big cliff there. There are big cliffs on either side of the river. And that's where the trail turns off and goes towards the Bighorn area. And early in the morning, as he was leaving his camp and was on a trail and going towards the Bighorn River, as he got on the rise, on the divide, he looked back towards the Yellowstone River, and further towards the east there was a camp smoke. And he could see two people, but he couldn't see any horses. So at that time, if you didn't have any horses, you either somebody stole your horses or you were in trouble. So he decided to check back and see if there were Crows. And as he moved back, he made himself visible and made motions to the people, and they also made signs back, saying that they were Crows. So Blackbird rode towards them and recognized them. One of them, the lady, was a cousin of his. And the man was a man called Long Bear. And these people had just been married recently, and they were living somewhere near Sheridan, Wyoming. And at this time, they were a part of the River Crows, and at this time the River Crows were decimated by smallpox and disease, but they were still living apart from the other tribe, from the other Crows. And so they were cooking something. They were cooking breakfast, and they told them to get off and eat. So doing the proper thing, Blackbird got off and tied up his horses and ate with the couple. And as they exchanged, made conversation, he found out that Long Bear was going to go to the Crazy Mountains to fast. And he said, "We've been married recently and having a lot of misfortune, bad luck." And he said, "We're having a hard time, so I want to go and fast." And so after they ate, Blackbird gave his pack horse to the couple so that at least the woman could ride. So Blackbird rode away and did not see them for a couple years, 2 years. And one summer day, he decided to visit his uncle again near Sheridan, Wyoming, and as he was riding towards the Bighorn River, somewhere near between Buster Creek and Muddy Creek, he noticed smoke, and as he looked towards where the smoke was coming from, he noticed a cabin. It was a fairly large sized cabin for that time. It was well kept, and you could see that it was brand new, and by the cabin were brand new corrals and a big barn, and near the barn were some good looking horses. horses, and in the corral was a good-looking gray stud. And so he rode up, and it looked like there were Indians living in there, but from the appearance, he thought they were white people. So he wanted to find out who were living there, and as he rode up, he started calling out. And to his surprise, from the door came his brother-in-law, Long Bear. And Long Bear was dressed in brand new clothes. He was dressed in, he could tell that he had, was wealthy from the way he was dressed. And he said, "Come on, take your horse to the barn, and there's some hay in there. Put him up and make sure he has a lot to eat, and give him some water, and come on in." He said, "You're going to stay with us a couple days." He said, "We're not going to let you leave right away. Come on in, and we're about to eat to eat lunch." He said, "Too. We're going to have the noon meal, and so." Blackbird got off and went into the house, and to his surprise, there were furnitures in the camp, and it was well furnished, and it was there was all kinds of food, and it was well supplied. And also his cousin, the lady that was poverty stricken, was well dressed, also had brand new clothes, and they
getting close to the end.
Oh, okay.
Turn them off.
Turn it off?
Yeah, but say you're going to do that.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to turn the tape, and we're going to turn it on the other side.
That he was maybe guessing from a license plate or something like that. So if you ever hear of who was there in summer of 1991 or 1992, that would be interesting, because they probably, and they told these people, one of them told the Singletons that he was a survivor, a descendant of the only survivor. And that didn't quite make sense to me, because there weren't any survivors, as far as I'm aware. And so someday maybe we'll have a clarification of that. But you don't know who that person might have been, do you, Bias?
No, I don't know.
Where was the pile of rock where Left Hand was killed?
But the rock is right here, and then a little ways from there, but south, isn't it? About maybe probably about 25 or 30 feet. This pile of rocks that's what my dad said. That's where the Left Hand.
Where Left Hand got killed, he said. When it was kind of far from the tape recorder, as he was handing the tape recorder to me. South, I'm trying to, I don't remember any pile of rock there. I hope they haven't removed that, accidentally not realizing what it was.
It's not too high, but that high, you know, there's rock, but that high.
A foot and a half or 2 feet high?
Yeah. The ground is stirred and flat, and you can tell there's rocks piled up, you know. That's where the Left Hand got killed.
I'm really anxious that the three of us go to this Crow Rock as soon as the weather permits it. I've been taking photographs of it, systematically taking many, many photographs with different kinds of film and different kinds of cameras. And I think it will take me two more
photography sessions to get all of the details photographed, because I want this to be available in the archives at Little Bighorn College so that people who don't have a chance to get there will still be able to see what the Crow Rock looks like and what went on there. So as soon as the weather permits, whether it's this winter or next spring, maybe the three of us can go.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm willing to go with you guys.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'll notify me when you guys leave, so I'll be ready for that.
You bet we will. Mm-hmm. Sure will. Very anxious to do this, because I consider this site here where the Crow Rock is to be a really important historical site for the Crow Indians. And it's probably one for the Sioux too, but I guess I am concerned about the Crow aspect of it, not the Sioux aspect of it. Well, is there anything else that you want to say at the moment, Grant?
Yeah, I think it would be important to pinpoint a date on this. You know, I think we can get an exact, not exact, but an approximate date on this from the records, you know, where, when Pretty Horse, Wright's Pretty was